confronted by approaching omnicides, climate disruption, nuclear war, massive pandemics, mass spread of poverty, and elected dictatorships. And it's in the hands of the people, as it always has been throughout history. Whenever they have achieved justice and they ask, how did this happen? It starts with one or two people conversing with each other and moving to larger numbers of stalwart civic advocates.
That's Ralph Nader, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Ralph Nader. It's in the hands of the people. What's going on in the United States? People are asking that question not only in this country, but around the world. Ralph Nader says, the twin swelling heads of empire and oligarchy are driving our country into an ever-deepening corporate state, wholly incompatible with democracy and the rule of law. America, Nader says, was not designed for kings and their runaway military pursuits. The media rolls over and fails to hold officials accountable. Historically, it's always been citizens overcoming differences, finding common ground, coming together, and making progressive change. It can happen. As Nader says, it's in the hands of the people. Our guest today is Ralph Nader, the son of Lebanese immigrants. He grew up in Connecticut. He's a legendary figure who has spent a lifetime fighting on behalf of ordinary people. The Atlantic named him one of the 100 most influential figures in U.S. history. At 90, he's as active as ever. I talked with Ralph Nader in mid-December. Well, Ralph, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Middle East now. In Syria, the dramatic toppling of the Assad government after almost 53 years of that political dynasty in about 12 days. Unbeknownst to most Americans, the U.S. has troops in Syria. Israel has greeted events in that country with a massive air attack, invasion, and more seizure of Syrian land. I say more because Israel seized and subsequently annexed the Golan Heights, which it captured from Syria in 1967, a blatant violation of the UN Charter. Where do you see things going in Syria? I know it's the early stages of a new government there.
Well, it's clear the Israelis want a fractured Syria, just like Hillary Clinton, the butcher of Libya, and got Obama to topple Gaddafi, who was disarming and cutting deals with the oil companies. And now Libya is fractured with militias and in a horrible, chaotic, violent state. And that's what the Israelis want, and that's why they're bombing all these weapons areas, as well as, by the way, civilian infrastructure, so that whatever central government is established by the rebels, they can't control the country. The U.S. government is a co-combatant with the Netanyahu terror state, a rogue state that thinks they can bomb anywhere, kill anybody in the Middle East, blow up hospitals, mosques, schools, marketplaces, clinics, ambulances, water mains, electricity, starve people in Gaza, all in violation of all kinds of international law, Geneva Conventions, the UN Charter, and six federal laws that condition shipments of U.S. weapons to foreign countries on good behavior, like observing human rights and not obstructing U.S. humanitarian aid into the area. Those are two federal laws that Biden is violating in favor of Netanyahu, who he cannot seem to say no to, and keeps shoveling billions of taxpayer dollars over there to kill more Palestinians. Biden is a real war criminal. He is a recidivist war criminal. He knows he's violating the laws, along with Blinken, the Secretary of State, and he continues to do so. He is lowballing the casualties over there. American doctors back from Gaza reported almost everybody in Gaza, if they're not dead or dying, they're sick and injured. The air pollution alone from the explosions, heavy metals, can hardly breathe when they blow up these apartment buildings. They blow up cemeteries. They blow up anything that stands and go after anybody who moves. This is a rogue terrorist regime. It should be called the Netanyahu genocidal terror regime, committing war crimes by the hour with total impunity. And Biden even attacks the World Court and the International Criminal Court on behalf of his master, Netanyahu. That's why people in this country are starting to call Biden and Blinken BB Biden and BB Blinken, violators of the U.S. legal system, violators of international law that we participated in establishing, the Geneva Conventions, the Nuremberg Rules, and the UN Charter.
The selective use of international law by Washington. The U.S. makes a lot of noise about its support for the rules-based international order. But there are double standards. For example, last year, 125,000 Armenians were ethnically cleansed from their millennial-old land of Nagorno-Karabakh, known as Artsakh in Armenian. This was done by Azerbaijan, supported by Turkey and Israel. It was barely covered in the media, and Biden and Blinken, the BBs as you call them, said nothing.
Yeah, it was hardly covered by the media. There's a lot of murky alliances that Israel has developed with very autocratic regimes. Now they want to cut deals with other dictators in the area that also want to profit from Israeli technology and trade. It's a chaotic area, but I think what history is going to show, David, is that Netanyahu and Biden are banking a lot of revenge that's going to come in the form of blowback against Israel and the U.S. Already, the Defense Department, CIA, and NSA are studying scenarios of blowback. That's their word. You know, it's like 9/11 blowback. And you just can't wipe out hundreds of extended families, babies, children, mothers, fathers, grandchildren, grandparents. You can't wipe out people. You can't arrest them, throw them in Israeli jails and torture them. Those are hostages too. Entire people of Gaza are hostages, for that matter. They've been long imprisoned with fences, embargoes, and sieges by the Israeli regime for years, controlling everything, exit and entry. You can't think that that is not going to produce any retaliation. Put the shoe on the other foot, just the way the debater, the Palestinian novelist, did at the Oxford Union. She said, what if all this was happening to Israel by some external power instead of happening to the Palestinians? You don't think there'd be any retaliation? What if it was happening to the U.S., some giant power, treating Americans the way Palestinians are treated by Israel, backed to the hilt by U.S. power? You don't think there'd be any retaliation from Texas or from Ohio? So we're living in a dream world here of futuristic impunity. It's not going to continue. And so these politicians are banking a lot of revenge against a lot of innocent casualties in the future. And we should always think of that when we decide to what extent we're going to be active in controlling our 535 members of Congress and the executive branch on foreign policy and the perpetuation of a vicious empire that thinks that they can send troops and war and drones anywhere with impunity.
On December 5th, Amnesty International determined that, quote, Israel committed and is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. This report, the New York Times buried on page 8, you can imagine if Amnesty had issued a similar report on Russia or Iran, what the coverage would be like.
A day later, David, a prominent Israeli historian, Lee Mordechai, issued a 170-page report of war crimes of Israel in Gaza and the West Bank, including video clips that are almost too horrific to view, like a group of Israeli soldiers urging a dog, calling out doggy, doggy, that was eating the corpse of a child under the rubble. And after the dog finished eating, they danced, these soldiers danced and sang Israeli songs. This report by Lee Mordechai, who taught for a year at Princeton, got no coverage in the New York Times and Washington Post, but it's on Haaretz's website. Haaretz gave it prominent coverage, the progressive, fearless newspaper in Israel that Netanyahu is now threatening to sanction. The major documentation of Netanyahu's war crimes are going to start coming from Israelis themselves. You have 16 Israeli human rights groups, very courageous, led by Beth Salem, of course, the ACLU of Israel, but much more courageous than the ACLU, which is kept fairly quiet on the genocide in Palestine. You have refuseniks, you have Breaking the Silence. Those are veterans, Israeli war veterans, who are standing tall. You have Rabbis for Human Rights. You have the Israeli press, some television networks. All this is going to be documented, but it's pretty late. And for over a year, the Netanyahu censorship of Israeli media has kept most Israelis from seeing what's going on, the death and destruction, genocide, dismemberment, mutilation, starvation, only a few miles away in Gaza in the West Bank. And of course, Biden, Bibi Biden, has gone along with Netanyahu's prohibition of U.S. journalists going to Gaza as war correspondents, independently reporting back to the American people and the taxpayer what's going on over there. And he's been asked repeatedly by 64 House Democrats, for example, led by Congressman Jim McGovern a month or so ago, to demand that Netanyahu allow U.S. reporters in, and for that matter, Israeli and other foreign nation reporters who are also banned from independent reporting. Biden won't even do that. Biden has been asked by doctors to support airlifting horribly burned infants and children who have been amputated to U.S. hospitals that are ready and able to take them for specialized treatment. He won't even do that. He doesn't even listen to his wife. In December, Dr. Jill Biden saw some mutilated slaughter satellite pictures, and she said to him, stop it now, Joe. And the source for that, by the way, is Joe Biden himself. And he didn't do it. He's a coward. He is a war criminal by any definition of international law. He has turned the USA into a co-belligerent, not just complicity, but technically a co-belligerent with the Israeli military genocide in Palestine, and now trying to fracture any kind of unified Syrian government replacing the Assad dictatorship. It's not just genocide anymore. It seems to move into the ultimate solution, which is omnicide. They want to either kill all the Palestinians, and there have been some Israeli leaders who basically said that over the years, or they want to force them out into the desert in Jordan and Egypt and take over the entire Palestinian territory. There's a big record of that, the hatred and the expulsion impulses of Israeli prime ministers going back to the late 1940s here that Noam Chomsky and others have documented. So what we're seeing here is overwhelming documentation, overwhelming opposition to the rule of international law by Netanyahu and his toady, Joe Biden, who it's almost embarrassing, humiliating to the U.S. and to the American people. Netanyahu is told there's an arrest warrant for him, and he lashes back at the court in The Hague, calling it anti-Semitic. And within a few hours, Biden issues a statement lashing back at the court. And he did it when the world court came out with a plausible case of genocide months ago. It's like he's a ditto head for Netanyahu. Privately, he doesn't like Netanyahu. Privately, in the White House, he says to his associates, Netanyahu is a chronic liar, that Netanyahu has lied to him. But he doesn't have the political courage to stand tall before the American people and the American national interest and say to Netanyahu, no more weapons. You're going to do peace negotiations. You're going to do reparations. Stop the killing. Let the thousands of trucks in with food, medicine, water that the taxpayer in America is paying for. And no more weapons. You understand that, Netanyahu? And no more vetoes on the National Security Council at the UN either, on the UN Security Council. That'll get Netanyahu's attention.
Al Jazeera is banned totally from Israel. Its reporting from Gaza has been truly extraordinary and courageous. You know, there was a photograph recently circulating of Biden in Nantucket coming out of a bookstore holding Rashid Khalidi's book, The 100 Years' War on Palestine. I wonder if he's actually going to read the book. It's a little bit late for him to be catching up on history.
It is very late. There's one thing he can do is recognize the Palestinian state, which Obama was asked to do in his last days in office and didn't. That would give the Palestinians a more international stature under international law. And Biden's being asked to do that. Biden knows that Netanyahu has killed about 200 journalists. They've targeted them, often killing them and their families on certain apartment floors that they blew up in Gaza. They've killed over 300 UN staff for UNRWA, the longtime relief organization for Palestinian refugees who've been driven from their home after 1948. Education, health care, food for these displaced Palestinians. And Israel has declared this UNRWA group as a terrorist organization. They've blown up all kinds of UNRWA facilities, schools and feeding centers in Gaza, and killed a lot of their staff, as I mentioned. And the question is, why is Israel still allowed to be a member of the United Nations? Do you know any other country in the world that can kill hundreds of UN staff, declare UN agencies terrorist organization, and even attack UN peacekeepers in southern Lebanon and still be a member of the United Nations because of the protection of the U.S.? The U.S. is the patron. The U.S. is Israel's veto on the Security Council. Hundreds of vetoes over the last 70 years.
Talk about the power and influence of the pro-Israel lobby. And it's not just AIPAC. There are other groups as well. What accounts for it? Is it just money?
It's money and a nonstop messianic support for whatever the Israeli government does, regardless of what political parties control it. It can be called the Israeli government can do no wrong lobbies. But it's not just them. The military-industrial complex, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, others, they make billions of dollars from the militarization of the Middle East and the weapons shipments to Israel. So they love what AIPAC is doing. AIPAC, I think, has reached its peak in Congress. There are already cracks. You have 64 members have defied AIPAC and demanded U.S. journalists. 12 senators on December 5th, led by Senator Schatz from Hawaii, signed a letter to Blinken demanding entry of U.S. journalists. congressional record now is featuring material critical of Israel. None of that was ever possible under the almost total dominance of Congress by the AIPAC lobby. And AIPAC ought to be asked publicly, are you opposed to U.S. journalists going to Gaza and reporting independently? Are you opposed to airlifting horribly burned infants for treatment, horribly amputated children in Palestine for treatment in U.S. hospitals like Shriner hospitals? You got to ask AIPAC these kinds of questions, which will either elicit a no or no comment. If no comment, it's really a yes. There's a lot more attention has to be paid to these lobbies by the media. Have you seen a lengthy investigation of AIPAC's influence in Congress by the New York Times, Post, or Wall Street Journal in the last year? No, not at all.
Well, there has been, as you say, a bit of a breakthrough on blanket support for Israel on Capitol Hill. On November 20th, 19 Democratic senators, led by Bernie Sanders, voted against sending more weapons to Israel. And younger generation American Jews and organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now and other organizations are speaking up against the policies of the Israeli government.
That's right. There's a big gap between the pro-Netanyahu Congress and Bibi Biden and American public opinion. The majority of people want a ceasefire. They want humanitarian aid. They want cut shipments, arms shipments, offensive arms shipments. That never happened before. And it's growing. There's an argument to be made that enough young people, African Americans, and of course Arab Americans and Muslim Americans, staying home on November 5th cost Harris the election. 7 million Democratic voters stayed home. That's the answer right there to Trump's victory. You can't have 7 million voters less than turned out in 2020 for Biden. 7 million less Biden voters stayed home. And that's the election right there, even though it came down very narrowly to only 230,000 votes in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. That was a margin of victory by Donald J. Trump, the convicted felon, the chronic liar, and the politician who says to Netanyahu, finish them off. You know what that means, against the Palestinians.
You're echoing what Peter Beinart, the author and CUNY professor, wrote in the Times op-ed that the Gaza cost the Democrats the election.
And the damage to our country's democracy intensifies because of the Israeli juggernaut. Suppression of civil liberties that you've reported, suppression of free speech on college campuses, people losing their jobs because they put something on their website compassionate for the Palestinian victims, law firms not wanting to hire young law student graduates like Sullivan and Cromwell, stating that that would be a disqualification of hiring law school graduates. We sent an objection to Sullivan and Cromwell in New York City, and the culpable partner has declined to respond. And then, of course, there's the influence in Congress, distorting the Congress into a criminal aider and abettor of a genocide over there, and prior Israeli attacks as well that killed hundreds and hundreds of children, not to mention civilian adults who just wanted to get through the day with their families and weren't part of any military opposition. And what they're doing to the executive branch, the State Department, the degrading of the Foreign Service, and what they're doing to the military budget and expanding it in an unaudited fashion, which is a violation of federal law itself. The Department of Defense, the only department that does not provide an audited budget every year to the U.S. Congress. That's a violation of a federal statute that began in 1992. So it's what's happening to our own democracy, a apart from any blowback, that should make all Americans very, very engaged, even the ones that don't care what's going on over there. Just consider what's coming up, what's going on here, all the impoverished areas that could use that money that's being shipped with unconditional hoopla by the Congress to Israeli terrorist regime.
Roz Segal, the Israeli-American Rutgers professor, he apparently lost a job that he was up for at the University of Minnesota because he was a critic of U.S.-Israeli policy. Students have been suspended for speaking out. There's been a real clampdown on free speech on campuses across the country.
Yes, and they don't get suspended for supporting Netanyahu. They don't get suspended for supporting arms shipments. They don't lose their jobs in the faculty. It's just very, very obvious one-sided anti-Semitism by these university administrators against the Palestinian Semites, the other anti-Semitism, as I mentioned.
I recall Edward Said telling me, for some American Jews and Christian evangelicals, Israel was a place that they simply sent a check to. Knowledge about realities on the ground is limited or non-existent. Again, why is that?
Well, the evangelicals have this ecclesiastical doctrine of an apocalypse, and in the end, the Jews are required either to join up or they get slaughtered. But Netanyahu knows that's just nonsense in any empirical sense, but he uses the evangelical clout over the Republican Party to the hilt. And part of the reason the Republican Party is so adamantly pro-Netanyahu is because back home they have all these evangelical churches demanding it. And they're part of the Israeli lobby too. Let's not forget that.
You're listening to Ralph Nader. It's in the hands of the people. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. Again, 1-800-444-1977. Or online, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. You're a lawyer. Talk about the rule of law and why it's so important. No one is above the law, we are told. On July 1st, the Supreme Court, in an historically astonishing judgment by any measure, ruled that presidents have virtual immunity from prosecution. After the election, Special Counsel Jack Smith dropped two federal cases against Trump. But in New York, things are different. Letitia James, the attorney general of that state, refused to drop the civil fraud case against Trump. What are your views on what's been happening around these legal issues and Trump?
Well, it's the collapse of the rule of law, and Trump is above the law, and so as Biden is violating six federal statutes that condition shipment of weapons to foreign countries, in the case of Israel, the Leahy human rights provision, for example, they all violate the laws. Trump is more blatant about it and probably violates far more laws and provisions of the Constitution. The presidency has become more and more a monarchy. The Supreme Court, as you alluded to in July, issued a coup d'etat, in effect. They repudiated our founders' insistence that the White House and the presidency be accountable to the Congress when initiating war, for example, appropriating money, for example, confirming presidential nominees for cabinet offices and other positions, for example. And Trump indicates contempt for all of that. And Biden wasn't that far behind. And the same for Obama and George W. Bush, the criminal invader of Iraq, and Clinton. They get used to it, partly because under the law of standing, The citizens can't take the government to court for such lawlessness. They're considered not having standing to sue, an ancient doctrine that has long outlived its usefulness from medieval England. So that leaves only the Attorney General. Well, the Attorney General was chosen by the president, not likely to sue the president. So we have a situation now coming up where we have a lawless president. We have a court system that allows him to be lawless with impunity. They didn't define official conduct or policy. So he's going to proceed as if he can commit any crimes and not be prosecuted, commit any violations of federal statutes and not be held accountable. Then you have the rubber stamp Congress, which long ago gave up its constitutional supremacy and gave it to the president. It didn't want the responsibility. And now it's under Republican control, so it's even worse in terms of their refusal to hold Trump accountable. So what's left? Oh, well, you have the million practicing lawyers. You have the bar. They're asleep at the switch. We've sent letters to state bar associations and the American Bar Association and said, look, you're the sentinels. You're the first responders. You're officers of the court. You stand against lawlessness. No real answer from the state bar associations and a kind of vague reply from the American Bar Association. How about the media? Well, the media is very good about repeating Trump's lies and then rebutting them, but they still trumpet Trump's lies. You know, any civic leader who lied like that, they wouldn't get any coverage. Well, Trump gets his capital letters repeated from his tweets. They actually put capital letters. No one I know of is given that kind of privilege and attention. And the media has been weaker and weaker. I remember it was once said, if Time magazine ever came out against the Vietnam War and Lyndon Johnson, that would be it. Well, I mean, it's laughable now to assume that any of these columnists, editorials have any impact whatsoever, whether they're liberal or conservative. So what is left is what's called the black swan. That is, something may come that we don't anticipate. And the analogy is 2009, when one person started the Tea Party movement, and it grew to be 300,000 active people, according to the Washington Post, putting pressure on the Republican Party. And, you know, they were messianic. They wanted deregulation, tax cuts, bigger military budget, etc. And they would flood the town meetings by the Republican lawmakers and stand up and exclaim themselves and demand this and that. And they pretty much took over via the Freedom Caucus, so-called, in the House of Representatives, the Republican Party. They dumped a couple speakers. We need that on the progressive left. Is it likely to come? I keep looking for signs. Maybe you see signs, David. I don't see any signs. The followers of Bernie Sanders are disillusioned because Bernie didn't really know how to organize them after 2016, when I think he had his drive for presidency sabotaged by the Hillary Clinton forces inside the Democratic Party apparatchiks. However, what's interesting is that most progressive agendas, all the way from peace to tax reform to living wage to universal health insurance to cracking down on corporate crooks, they all have tremendous left-right support. 85% of people want higher taxes on the wealthy and the big corporations. That's a lot of conservative people. 85%. Huge percentages want a $15 minimum wage. It's now $7.25 at the federal level. Some states have raised it a little. And if you talk about cracking down on corporate crooks, you're in the 90% area. But, you know, the Democrats are indentured to these corporate conflicted consulting firms that they've contracted out their campaign to. And these firms decide strategy tactics. They exclude citizen group input. We have tons of evidence on that. And they raise the money. So if they raise the money from the fat cats and the Democrats outraised the Republicans in the recent presidential election by a lot, where'd it come from? Came from corporations, came from commercial sources. So they deliberately do not adopt the Bernie Sanders agenda, which is a winning agenda, and it could have landslided the Republicans. That's the scene as I see it.
What are the possibilities for, call them progressive attorneys general, state courts, and scores of federal judges appointed by Biden to defend our civil liberties and the Constitution? Can they tie Trump up into legal knots?
Well, that is a good point. The state attorney generals, Democrats, they will mobilize and file suits. And there are quite a few federal judges, but you still have these circuit court of appeals that have a lot of Bush and Trump nominations sitting on them. And, of course, the Supreme Court has lost 6-3. So you can win at the district level, but, you know, they're going to appeal everything the way the lawyers for Trump appealed everything to get rid of the cases, the 4 indictments that he was subjected to. He basically got away with everything. It's just remarkable. I've semi-humorously have said you ought to teach a law school course. He's the world's expert on how to escape the law, how to be a successful fugitive from justice, both as a business executive, where he violated all kinds of laws, and as a president, where he violated all kinds of laws. Yeah, he used the White House for campaign events. That's a violation of criminal statute called the Hatch Act. Got away with that. He spent money on the wall that Congress deliberately refused to appropriate. He just shifted it from the educational school budget of the Pentagon. You know, they have schools for the soldiers and their personnel. He got away with it. He said it himself in July 2019. He said publicly, quote, "With Article 2, I can do whatever I want as president," end quote. There you are, right there. Bruce Fein, as a constitutional law expert, said that alone was an impeachable offense. Well, you know, Nancy Pelosi could have nailed them on several impeachment counts. She refused. She just used the Ukraine thing and then the January 6th. But she didn't use a lot of tabletop impeachment counts, literally refusing to enforce consumer health, safety, and economic protection laws. They swore to enforce, shutting down essentially the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, firing all kinds of civil servants and scientists. But there are a lot of others. We had John Larson put 12 impeachment counts in the congressional record in 2019, for anybody who's interested. And Nancy Pelosi only picked the Ukrainian so-called bribery issue, which isn't exactly a tabletop issue for American people. She didn't put the Republican head of the Senate on the defensive with numerous impeachment counts where he would have had to have public hearings that would have been very embarrassing to him and to Trump. She let him off. And it's just another example of Democrats hitting singles instead of home runs, very, very meek, very passive in their assault.
Are you concerned about the Department of Government Efficiency led by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy? And talk about Musk's overall influence on Trump.
Musk is the most fascinating big business executive in American history. Let's give him his due. Before he went off the rails, he broke the monopoly against electric cars by the auto industry successfully with Tesla. Nobody did that in decades. There were electric cars back in 1920. So you have to give him his due. Also, he's a brilliant, bold entrepreneur. I don't know where he finds such skilled people to manage SpaceX and other ventures that are extremely profitable. Starlink, he's got other companies, hundreds of billions of dollars worth, Wall Street estimates, before they go public in a year or two. So he's the richest man in the world, and he's got a highly inflated stock portfolio of Tesla, which is hugely overinflated because he's in the news all the time and he has a big fan club. Well, sometime earlier this year, he just went off the rails. He began tweeting like Trump, began lying like Trump, allied himself with Trump, and now he's appointed to this so-called department, but it's really going to be an advisory committee. And he cannot meet the conflict of interest rules legally and be part of that. And also his ally. They got too many conflicts of interest. So that's going to be a litigation, or it's going to be a subject of some action on Capitol Hill by the Democrats. Then he's talking about cutting $2 trillion. I mean, that's crazy. That's never going to happen. It'd be a revolution in this country. You cut the veterans' hospitals, you cut the Social Security benefits, you cut health and safety protection, transportation subsidies, all the corporate welfare. You know, what are you going to do, crack down on corporate crime, ripping off Medicare? You have a revolution of corporate crooks against them. So it's just a lot of talk. The press is not focusing intensively on, oh, you want to cut $2 trillion? Well, are you going to cut hundreds of billions of dollars of corporate handouts, subsidies, giveaways, and bailouts? Let's have your own contracts, Elon. Let's put them on the public surface so we can examine how inefficient they are for the U.S. taxpayer.
You've long been an advocate of single-payer health care. The U.S., among the 10 most prosperous nations, has some of the worst health outcomes. 40% of all bankruptcies are directly attributed to health care. Talk about what happened in New York with the murder of the United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson and the response. The New York Times reports that the killing, quote, unleashed a torrent of morbid glee from patients and others who say they have had negative experiences with health insurance companies at some of the hardest times of their lives. Some of the comments were, thoughts and deductibles to the family. Another one said, unfortunately, my condolences are out of network. The dark commentary after Thompson's death highlighted the anger and frustration over the state of healthcare in America, where those with private insurance often find themselves in Kafkaesque tangles while seeking reimbursement for medical treatment and are often denied. We'll talk about this so-called system of healthcare in the United States.
Well, here's where we're at. Since the assassination of Mr. Thompson, there's been more press coverage about the denial of benefits, the denial of coverage by these extraordinarily profitable giant insurance companies like Humana, United Health Insurance, Cigna, Aetna, than there has been in the last 3 years. And there's more attention now on Medicare disadvantage, hollowing out traditional Medicare and corporatizing Medicare for the elderly with incredibly deceptive advertisements that people have seen in the last few weeks on TV and radio and in the mail. So what does that say? That says that active violence focuses attention on what should have been attended to and legislated in terms of single payer, everybody in, nobody out, much more efficient, better outcomes, less anxiety, the way the single payer system works in Canada and other Western countries that you alluded to. So this is the crisis of democracy that we're into. that this man who's alleged to have killed the chief executive of Giant United Health Insurance, because apparently he had a bad experience with getting reimbursed or covering his back problem for which he had surgery, his motive, as far as we know, is that these insurance companies are killing people. It's called silent violence. If you arbitrarily and recklessly deny coverage or deny reimbursement, and as one of the nurses said in the New York Times piece, you watch people die in hospitals because they can't afford the health care that they're needed in their dire moments of affliction. And this nurse, emergency room nurse, said that she's seen far too many people die for that cause. So the silent violence of corporate greed and power over consumers and the medical profession produces deaths every day. In fact, there are studies showing that 100,000 people die in U.S. every year because they can't afford to get health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. That's 2,000 a week. There aren't many studies, but there's a lot of observation by doctors and nurses about what happens to people when companies like United Healthcare have prior authorization, which means they have some company doctors or nurses far away from the hospital or the clinic, second-guessing the doctors who want to prescribe a procedure or treatment, and under the health insurance policy of the patient, that is reverted back to approval or disapproval called prior authorization. It drives doctors up the wall. Well, you know, you can't cover everything. You can't compensate everything. There's some treatments that are off the wall. However, the power of these companies is such that they can make more profits in direct proportion to the number of people who they deny coverage to. And then you can appeal, and that's a huge procedural obstacle, by the way. But if you do appeal, 90% of these prior authorizations get reversed. But in the meantime, you know, people are sick. They're dying. They're hurting. So the appeals process is a very minor remedy in practice. We'll see whether this becomes a show trial for the shooter. And there's far more attention by the press in exposing these rackets. It's not that they haven't exposed them. They have, but they've gone nowhere with the state and federal lawmakers. They are in the pockets of the health insurance industry and the drug industry. The drug industry has more than one full-time lobbyist for every member of Congress. The consumers are lucky if they have five for the whole Congress.
On your radio hour, you recently did a program on AI, artificial intelligence. What are its promises, and more importantly, what are its dangers?
Its promises are in very traditional areas. They'll be able to predict the weather better. They'll be able to maybe diagnose certain patterns of illnesses better. But in the hands of ravaging giant corporations, it could be one of the menaces of all time. You associate artificial persons called corporations, which have heavy doses of immunity to begin with the use of artificial intelligence and algorithms, and you can create mayhem. You can create enormous fraud. You can control consumers. You can displace workers. You can mimic the pictures of politicians and scare them. You can invade all kinds of privacies. You can start messing around with young people who pick that stuff up and use it against one another, which is already beginning to happen. It's not regulated. It's not fully understood. It keeps mutating and metastasizing. It's one of the great issues of our planet, as to whether we are going to automate the human being with these algorithms. While there's a lot of articles written about it, you're going to see more and more of the damage. You'll see more and more lawsuits, and you'll see more and more Republican and Democratic support in state legislatures and Congress to control it, even though they're very belated. They didn't understand it, and they let it emerge into the force that it has at the present time. But they're so afraid of it personally and politically being applied to them that you will have a bipartisan effort, I think, coming up to do something. But they don't really know how to regulate it, who to regulate it, where is it, what's it, who owns it, where is it in the world? See what I mean? It's what might be called, quote, beyond the effective limits of legal action, unquote, to take the words of the former dean of Harvard Law School, Roscoe Pound, when he was asked about regulating prohibition against the production and use of alcohol and how hard it was to keep it from becoming a profitable underworld marketplace. He said it might be, quote, beyond the effective limits of legal action, end quote. And if that's the case, Katie, bar the door, David. Katie, bar the door. But let's remember one thing. We have a constitution that starts and ends with we the people. Corporations, company, political parties, never mentioned. We are the sovereign power. We've given it up to the Congress. We can grab it back. We've given it up to the courts. We can grab it back. We can give it up to the executive branch. We can grab it back. It's in our hands. We are the majority. Congress is controlled significantly by 1,500 corporations that don't have one vote. We have all the votes. There is left-right support for all kinds of progressive agendas that I mentioned earlier. Living wage, universal health insurance, cracking down on corporate crime, a decent tax system, cutting back on the bloated military budget and empire, funding public works and public services and communities throughout the country, educational facilities, on and on. Huge left-right support. It's in your hands, people, including people who listen to this program.
Ralph, in your incredibly busy life, do you ever have time to read poetry?
I've read all the poetry I have time to read many years ago.
There's one Langston Hughes poem that I'd like to read to you. It's called Dreams. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Langston Hughes.
Beautiful.
What are your dreams?
That people incorporate in their daily lives engagement with a just society, from the local community to the world stage. We're being confronted by approaching omnicides, climate disruption, nuclear war, massive pandemics, mass spread of poverty, and elected dictatorships. And it's in the hands of the people, as it always has been throughout history. Whenever they have achieved justice and they ask, how did this happen? It starts with one or two people conversing with each other and moving to larger numbers of stalwart civic advocates.
In February, you're turning 91. What's ahead for Ralph Nader?
Well, more of the same. More of the same, David. Injustice never takes a holiday. They don't take weekends off. So it's incumbent on some of us to match them.
Thanks very much for your time. You were just listening to Ralph Nader, It's in the Hands of the People. I talked with him in mid-December. A legendary figure, Ralph Nader has spent a lifetime fighting on behalf of ordinary people. Life magazine ranked him as one of the most influential Americans of this era. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Peter Bennert, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Chris Hedges, and Arundhati Roy. And we have a series of programs with Ralph Nader. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Ralph Nader, It's in the Hands of the People, and for Noam Chomsky's latest book, The Myth of American Idealism, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Series theme music is performed by the Kronos Quartet from Pieces of Africa. Special thanks to KGNU. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.